To Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. Look, I'm going to take a sip of water right away. My voice is kind of funny. Just a second. Pardon me. It shows it's a live show. Oh, yes. My voice is coming out funny. Okay, so welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about focusing attention, specifically focusing our attention as leaders so that we can, well, really concentrate, so that we can reach a successful outcome, so that we can properly lead, right? So what do we need to do to focus our attention? Where do we need to do it? With as leaders, within our context. Oh, I see people answering already. Thank you so much for being here. Within our context, which is, of course, a mediation, a negotiation, a civil dialogue, a alternative dispute resolution, right? Mm-hmm. Where do we, as leaders, need to focus our attention? Mm-hmm. Yes, we're talking about each of the participants, a lot of us. I think the first thing we're going to be talking about is focusing attention on our participants to create a good group dynamic, right? Yeah, we need to focus and really be able to think about them and think about how we're going to make this clump of dissimilar, kind of disorganized, maybe dissatisfied people into a working unit, into something that will really have a good group dynamic, will really reach a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Another place we need to focus our attention is to have empathy for others. And remember that, I'm going to call this entire group empathy, and remember that that is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. And we're going to discuss who we're going to have empathy for and that they should have empathy for us too in understanding so that we can make ourselves clear and people understand where they are, what we're doing, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true too. How about focusing on creating a workable conclusion? Not just a successful outcome that looks good on paper, but something that really gets somewhere, a workable conclusion, something practical, something that's really useful, something that'll last for years and really, really do good in the world, right? Yeah, and not just kind of a pretty thing that's nice. And we made a, you ever see anybody make a statement of intent? We think apple pie is good, yes, and we're all for it, and we're going to work towards peace in the world and healthy babies. But how? Well, that's to be determined at a later date. Yeah, you see those kinds of statements made, especially by politicians, but even by organizations and things, they make kind of pronouncements about what's good and what's bad and what would be good and nice in the world. That's nice, but we are practical people, and we want a workable solution that we can actually do. Hmm. Yes, this is true too. It's more to the beginning, but all the way through, really, this is true, come to think of it. We're going to focus our attention on defining success, right? Focus our attention on defining success. What is it that we want so that we know it when we've got it? What is it that we want so that we know it when we've got it? Let's focus our attention on success, right? Yeah. What is it that we want? Mm-hmm. So let's start with focusing on each participant to create a good group dynamic, a useful group dynamic, something that really gets somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing we're going to do is, yes, listen. Listen. Listen to what your participants have to say. I like to go around the room and ask people a question each time because it gives us something to know about each other. And the first time, usually, I go around the room after we figure out who you are, right, who introduce yourself, is why are you here, right? Why are you here? That's a very important question because it tells us if everybody's there for the same purpose, if we got real enthusiasm in the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the reason is just a practical one, right? I once had a law professor in a class. There was an evening class for adults. I have an LLM, and that's a thing that's a secondary law degree that you do kind of after you're an adult and after you're a lawyer. And it was a kind of a complicated international tax class. And the guy, the teacher, the professor, went around the table. There were not too many of us. And he asked why you are here. And really the answer was, pretty much by everybody, it was the only class offered on a Wednesday night. Isn't that funny? But sometimes the reason, and I remember that, because that's why I was there. I had absolutely no interest in the topic itself. I wouldn't have chosen it if there had been other choices, something more useful to me, right? But there we were, and it was the only one offered on a Wednesday night. And we had Wednesday night open in our calendars. Hey, but I always remember that when I think about why you're here and asking people that, why are you here? And because sometimes there's just a practical reason. I see this practical reason a lot, and it doesn't lead to enthusiasm, but it's a starting point. I'm here because I'm of the management level that is required to participate. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm here because I'm of the management level that's required to participate in this group. For some reason, all of the, you name it, are required to participate. Well, that's a good reason. Now let's work on it and become enthusiastic participants. Really want to get this done. Really buy into it, right? But sometimes you don't have personal enthusiasm. Sometimes people are here because they need credit hours of some sort. Sometimes they're here because it's a resume enhancer. You see, sometimes people are dedicated to resolving the issues and they're all excited and enthusiastic. And sometimes, why are you here? The real answer is for pragmatic reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something that you need to listen to and think about and make a group out of. Because by the time we're done, why are you here will be, well, I was originally here because I was the level that had to be here in my job. But now I am here because I want to see this through, because I want change to take place, because I want there to be a successful outcome. See, that's a creation of a group dynamic and not just creation of a group, right? Yeah, because anybody can be a group, just a clump of people. But a clump of people doesn't get anywhere. You have to work together. And it's that working together that creates the strong group dynamic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are saying when you listen to participants, you have to focus. Mohammed says focus on the tone of voice. Mm-hmm. Really listen to what they are meaning and not necessarily just what they're saying. Because not everybody admits that it's the only class on a Wednesday night. They go for brown-nosing the teacher, and they say, because I have a tremendous interest in kind of commercial international law. Well, gee willikers, that's nice, but is it true? Let's listen to your tone of voice. Let's listen to your use of words. Mm-hmm. Yes. Ooh, this is a good point, too. Sometimes when people, usually when people talk, they reveal about themselves and their opinions, right? And sometimes you understand by listening that someone perceives something as fact, which isn't, which is opinion, which might even be bias, but they think it's a fact. They really and honestly do, and that needs to be remedied. We need to talk about it. We need to maybe not point it out to the individual in an insulting manner, because remember, we always have the civility rules in place. The civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to one another. Very important. Mm-hmm. If someone perceives something as fact, we will discuss it as a group. Some sort of a bias. Some sort of an idea that just isn't fact is sometimes perceived as such. And you're like, really? No, we're going to talk about this. Let's get our facts straight first. What do we know? Do we think we know? And what do we need to find out? That's why there's research, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. People are talking about body language as listening to participants also, because you don't actually have to listen with your ears, of course. You listen with your whole senses. You listen with your mind. You listen with your eyes, right? Yes, in addition to your ears. And so body language, we've actually done several shows on body language. They are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes. A lot of times we focus on body language because it is violating the civility rules, right? And the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another in their very basic form. Civility rules need to be enforced, to be announced. I announce them even if I don't think I'm going to need it with this group, even if this is a fairly homogenous group and we're all kind of, I've got the same idea. I announce the civility rules anyway, because you never know, and they're always in play. And hopefully the group, you know, looks at you and goes, yeah, we got that part. And we're talking about through body language, because a lot of times the civility rules are breached through body language. Sighing. Folding your arms, making noises. How about texting to somebody else, which is the new note passing, right? And you know that someone is texting to somebody else in the room because they're giggling and looking up. I mean, it's easy to find out. It's like notes. Yes, I will confiscate a mobile device. I will give warning once. It violates the civility rules to text in class and make to text during group, as they say, and pass notes. Obviously that does, which is, yeah. And then I will confiscate. Right. A belligerent stance, a belligerent voice tone, all body language. This is all important to not let get hold of the group. Because sometimes people don't actually say something rude, but they say it in a rude manner, right? Or they, I don't know, sigh, roll their eyes, use that tone of condescending voice, right? It is very important that you not let the group become uncivil. The civility rules must be announced right up front, and then they must be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. You cannot try to enforce the civility rules after you've got let the group become uncivil. It's just hard. You've already let it get away from you. No, we're going to enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. So that we don't have the problem. Now, what if we do have the problem? Because that's the next question that's coming up. And we might as well talk about it here. What if we do have the problem? What if we've got a bully on our hands? What if we've got someone who is deliberately attempting to derail the process? Ah, we're getting folk that are asking why. Well, that would be the question to ask the person. But sometimes the why is fairly obvious, especially in my case. If I have a specialty, and I suppose I do, I get called in to groups that have already failed but can't fail. They've already become hostile. They've already lost their group dynamic. But whatever the issues are, they must be handled. So they can't just fail, right? They must be accommodated. It must be done. And it's very, very important to enforce the civility rules immediately and tell them that there's a new sheriff in town. But you might have something bad in the group, the prior leader, right? This person wants you to fail as leader of this group because they don't want to be the only one. It's human nature. They don't have to be bad people. They want to be able to say, well, Sue could not get it straightened out, for God's sakes. Nobody could. They want to be able to say, I wasn't a bad leader. It couldn't be done. So they're going to work to try to derail they're going to become uncivil. You need, before you enter any group as leader, before you take on any project, but especially if you've taken on a project where there's been prior failure and you've got the same people involved because for some reason they can't be moved, maybe also a level of employment, right? You must get straight before you take this on how much power you have to enforce. Will the employer, and remember everyone, that I call the person, the entity, the board, the whatever it is that brought us in, the employer, even if it's not technically true, it's a generic term to this show, we just call them the employer. The employer must need to back you. Financial repercussions, professional repercussions, ostracism repercussions, something big that can happen if they don't comply with the civility rules and put their best effort forward. I can't stress how much importance there is on that. I like it in writing because sometimes the employer will say, yes, yes, of course, but when it comes down to it, they don't. I like it in writing that it's in a violation of my contract not to, well, fill in the blank so that we can really be effective and really get going, right? Yes. Because you might have someone who has a purpose in derailing this particular group, and we're not going to let them. Then we must have power to enforce the civility rules. They can't just be words, like we just talked about theory. Can't just be words. You need the power to enforce. The next one we're going to talk about is focusing on our participants, how about their interactions, right? How about focusing on their interactions and how they are interacting with the other participants? Yes, it's the play nice theory, I suppose. Well, it kind of is, because they have to get together for this specific group, for these specific issues at this specific time, to pull together as a group, reach a successful outcome, and go forward, right? Yes, so you need to focus on their interactions. Sometimes you get kind of a tight group, especially the ones that have failed. They're tight, but they're mad at each other. Ooh, that's a bad combination. We need to get it very straight, who's in charge, which would be you, the leader, and that we are not going to fail again, period. We're just not. Will they believe you? Yes, they will, because we're going to, first of all, yes, that is a very sensible question. Thank you. Georgina and others want to know if you have to keep the failed group and why don't you just switch them out? The answer is yes and no. Sometimes the group is a certain level of employment. I deal with multinational corporations. Is a certain level and it can't be moved. But you can threaten people's, well, their participation in the certain level of employment. It's usually high, right? Now, sometimes you can convince the employer to use different people for the next try. A different level, a different skill set. Maybe the skill set wasn't right. Sometimes you can divide the group up into smaller groups and kind of prevent some of the friction. Because all these people have prior relationships. And you may need to separate them. Sometimes I see something that's very much like a clique, where you have people that are excluding the other folk in the group, and they're kind of little groups unto themselves, and they're all excited and talking together and like that. No. Sometimes you need to divide participants who have prior relationships. You always need to divide cliques. You need to watch for it. Because they're exclusionary, they will not help you to create a successful outcome. I make subcommittees. I give them other tasks. I see if I can indeed revolve the membership of this committee with maybe others that I have, right? Depends how many people I'm dealing with, too, and whether or not we can divide up. Yes, Valerie says that sometimes people have preconceived notions about each other. Very much so. There are two kinds of preconceived notions about other people. Well, there's many, but there's two kinds underlying. The first kind is through experience. I have personally had experience with these people. I have personally had experience with people like these people. They belong to the same, I don't know, fill-in-the-blank group, right? There's also learned preconceived notions. My grandmother taught me this. Everybody, ever see anybody start a sentence with "everybody knows"? Everybody knows that, generally speaking, those sentences are not something that everybody knows. But they're really convinced that that what they've said is a fact, not an opinion, not a preconceived notion, an actual fact. Everybody knows that, let's fill in that blank, right? And so you need to talk about these. You need to understand that maybe it was true in the past, because you never denigrate anybody's experiences or their ethnic teachings, but now we think differently, right? Maybe it was true in the past, but now we think differently. Both experienced and learned, yes. Let's focus on empathy. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. And we talk about empathy, but we don't necessarily think it through. Because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. For empathy, you need the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? You need to get down to the bottom of it. You need to figure out what's going on. Who, what, where, when, and why. Excuse me. My voice is going slightly again. That's annoying. My throat must be swollen. So, who, what, where, when, and why? Who do we need empathy for? Well, we need empathy for everybody we're dealing with, right? The answer is people asking if you ask all questions at the same time. Nope, and not necessarily in that order. It's a leadership decision. You decide which question you need now because this is the answer you need to get to, right? Now, sometimes you ask them all kind of one after another because you really want to get down to why this is happening. Who told you that? What did they say? When did you hear it? Where did you hear it? And why did you have that reaction? Said in a very civil, polite way so that we can really elicit truthful responses. And the funny thing is, if you ask the 5W questions, sometimes the person themselves goes, that is kind of not true anymore. That is kind of unreasonable. I never thought of it that way. You see, I never thought of it that way is an awfully fine sentence. And it makes you really think through your responses as a participant and as a leader. Remember, we need empathy for ourselves too. We need understanding. We need to answer the 5W questions, even if it's not in front of our participants, but it's in front of our mirror. We need to be honest and ask who, what, where, when, and why on a regular basis so that we're not in some way biasing things. Not in some way causing some sort of a reaction, right? So participants, you need to model civility, model enthusiasm, and model understanding. You are the leader. Everybody looks to you to set the tone of the group dynamic. Everybody looks to you to lead, to make a group out of this diverse pile of people, right? Yeah. And you must model what you intend for them to do, and that is enthusiasm and civility. Yes, this is true. Hussein and others are talking about when you have people in the room who have the same goal but different reasons for wanting it. The same goal, but different reasons for wanting it. It makes kind of a diverse group, doesn't it? Yes. You've got quite a diverse group, and you need to make them into a cohesive unit, right? A cohesive whole. So let's model civility, model enthusiasm, and find out what our successful outcome looks like. We're going to talk about defining it a little later in the program. Sometimes people are there for different reasons, but they have the same goals. Yeah, the simplest example is in this state, marijuana is not legal. Well, all right, it's legal now, but it's not federally legal. But there was a big fight to try to make it onto the ballot and like that for states, to make marijuana legal to use statewide. And a whole bunch of folk that were very different but wanted the same goal had to fight together, had to get together and really work together as a team. You had buyers and growers and sellers and users, all kinds of different organizations that seek to alleviate different types of diseases. everything from HIV to molecular deterioration in elderly people, right? Yeah. And so you have a whole bunch of different people in the room, don't like or respect each other, but they need the same thing. This is where I tell them, and this is always a surprise. Try this someday. It's a real surprise to people. If we get together and create a good group dynamic, we get this on the ballot, we get it voted through, do we get to that successful outcome, the festive we won't have to meet together, right? Yeah. This is always a surprise to people, right? The better we do it, the faster we're done. Hey, this is a good idea. Also, you need to really have people understand that they're part of the group, that they need to give it their all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, different reasons, same goals. Sometimes you have to have empathy for your employer. Remember, we're using it as a generic term. And find out what they really want. How about what the funding really is? Because a lot of times that influences what we really want, right? I want to know how much funds we have to work with. Mm-hmm. How about changing circumstances? How about if the employer changes? Where are we going to be? Well, we're going to be up a different path. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Empathy for outsiders. We're going to focus on that too. Let's find out how come they're outsiders. Maybe they're not as far apart as we think. Sometimes groups are formed, opposition is formed, after we start to gain some traction and get somewhere with our goals and our defining success. And then somebody goes, oh, no, I don't like that. And, like, you know, the answer is, well, who, what, where, when, and why? Because maybe we're not as far apart as we seem. You never know. Maybe we're not as far apart as we seem. Mm-hmm. Yes. And maybe we are, but at least we know it already. Mm-hmm. How about focusing on empathy for our invisible participants? Those are the people who do not actually appear by name, but who influence those who do, who have a really hard way of thinking about it. But you have to go, look, you don't want to be known. You want to be anonymous. I want to hear what you have to say, because what you have to say is very valid. What you have to say is very important, right? Yes. And it is something that we need to know. Perhaps you could be an expert and help us, right? Not an actual participant, but an expert. Perhaps you could just tell it to me, the leader, and then I would understand the problem of unintended consequences that's about to occur. Ooh, I hate that sentence. Unintended consequences. We try very hard not to have those, right? Let's find out if our invisible participants want to come in. Our visible participants are those who are influencing, are they outsiders, but they are influencing our actual participants, because our actual participants kind of report to them. Now, is that statement really a written report type statement? Well, no. Our invisible participants are influencing our participants. They're influencing what they think. They're influencing what they conclude. They're influencing whether or not they're satisfied and what they define successful outcome as. Let's talk to them, for God's sake, and not have a game of telephone where it's like, oh, well, that's nice. that we are not getting an opinion straight, not getting it straight from the person that's saying it. Why do they want to remain anonymous is the question that's being asked. A variety of reasons, usually economic and leadership ones, and or really. They might be in a leadership position in some sort of a group that likes the status quo, for example, but they see that things could be better and they'd like to help, but they don't want anybody to know. It might affect them economically if it doesn't work, right? And they've taken the wrong side. They've chosen the wrong side to back. Yes, they think that some sort of change should be made, but they're part of the establishment now, and they don't want to lose that, especially if the change doesn't go through, right? Well, yeah, you got to be cautious, right? But they've got something to contribute that you'd really like to know, and they're pushing a participant. And we'd like to know that, too. We'd like to know if one of our participants has become kind of the voice of someone else. Mm-hmm. Very important. Mm-hmm. Are you visible participants outsiders? Kind of. They're not really outsiders in the fact that they are known to some of our participants. But they're outsiders in the fact that they don't want to be part of the group dynamic, and that makes them outsiders. Now, we talked about focusing on self-empathy, right? Self-empathy, understanding, not necessarily agreement. Well, all right, we usually agree with our own self because those are our conclusions. But let's consider how we've made them. Let's consider the idea of preconceived notions. Right? Let's have some understanding about what we're doing and not just do it by rote, not just do it without thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Conceptions do we have? And are we bringing them to the table, and are they coloring our thinking? Are they influencing, impacting what we think we're doing, right? Do we always think we're right? That's a preconceived notion that's pretty much always wrong, right? Yes, I see that with leaders. I see them being always right, even if whatever they thought has turned out to be wrong. They can't let it go. They can't just be wrong. They have to keep going down a path that is no longer valid in order to validate their own feelings and their own preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. Suki and others are talking about emotional responses. You ever have that? Ever have a real visceral response to somebody? I have. A real, either I like you, I don't like you, I think you're a liar, that kind of visceral response. Never being a big word. The civility rules are always in place, right? Right. And you must always use them, right? Right. But you need to lead the civility rules. And sometimes your emotional response bursts through and it's less than civil. You ever have that? Before you can stop it, your emotional response bursts through the door. And you've reacted not so good as a leader, right? Somebody really pushed your buttons and egged you on, for example, and you responded in kind. The next day, or maybe immediately, depending on how it's going, you will not just ignore it that you breached the civility rules, but you will use it as a valuable learning lesson, a teaching tool, right? Right. And the teaching tool is, I accidentally violated the civility rules, and I apologize. I apologize, and it will not happen again. I apologize. Sometimes things happen. Apologize. Acknowledge. Don't just move on and assume that nobody saw it. Don't just move on and assume that everyone thinks you're perfect and therefore it didn't happen. Apologize, for heaven's sakes. And make it sincere and make it last. Don't just do it again. Remember, if you make a mistake and you violate the civility rules, as your model of civility rules doctrine, if you violate that, apologize. Mm-hmm. Focus on self-empathy. A lot of folk are talking about the relationship with the participants and the employer and outsiders and like that. If possible, and oftentimes this is not completely, I try to have a clean slate and not particularly have a relationship with any of the tools that we, not any of the participants, the employer, the participants, the outsiders. I try to keep it professional. Sometimes we do have an outside the door relationship because we deal with each other a lot. But remember your own self-understanding as to where that relationship is. And don't just, I don't know, this may be uncivil, but it's not against an actual person. Don't just, and if it is, I apologize, don't just get desperate and do something personal in a professional relationship. I see women do this with some frequency, and it always works out badly. You need to really keep your professional life and your personal life separate, in my personal opinion. It's what I do, okay? And I can only tell you what I do. And that's one of the things that I have understanding for. I understand that that is the way for me to become a successful professional and really be a good person to lead these consensus buildings, lead these alternative dispute resolution. That's why I'm the right person, and I'm the new sheriff in town, and my specialty is groups that have already failed. I know all of these things. That is possibly personal to me, but you should decide what your own leadership empathy for yourself is. You should decide how far you're going to go. And I recommend no further than the professional boundaries. Let's focus on workplace workable conclusions, right? We like theory. We like it a lot. We like something that's workable much better, something that can be put into place, something that's an aha moment, right? Yes. How are we going to get that workable conclusion? Yes, thank you. Annika and Eric and others are talking about bringing in experts. Bringing in experts to prevent unintended consequences. Sometimes your actions have repercussions. In fact, they almost always do. And you don't want these unintended consequences to accidentally take over. You don't want the unintended consequences to ruin your successful outcome. You're going to need some experts, because if people in the group knew, they would have told you. I oftentimes bring in more than one expert because I like to know all sides. I like to know all opinions so that I can make a reasonable judgment of what to do. Yes. People are asking, who do I bring in as an expert? It kind of depends. My favorite type of expert is a person who has done it before, even if they fail, because that's learning too, right? My favorite expert has experience, practical experience. my favorite media expert, someone who I present to the media as an expert in our case, has fancy credentials. They might, I would like them to have experience too, but they need to be impressive. Because quite frankly, I'm not impressed by credentials. If you've got experience, especially, you know who makes the best expert? Somebody who's failed already. And they can tell you what they did wrong because they've thought on it. They've had some back thoughts. They've had some thinking about it, some analysis. But for the media, they like to see something that they can write down as being credentials, right? So it's different. It's different to have experts pulled in for your own edification, so we can all agree, and maybe even break up any kind of animosity. And it's different than if you are dealing with the media and you've got a spokesperson, which is oftentimes you, but you need an expert to really explain it. And it makes a big difference, especially in tech and things. An expert will really hone in on what you need to know. And that's the whole point, right? Mm-hmm. And tell you things you didn't even consider. And it's not too late until you've put your plan into action, which means that your circumstances might change with your workable conclusion, and you need to be flexible. What if we really find out something? Well, that circumstances have changed. We need to be flexible. We need to incorporate that in our plan, in our actions. We're also going to focus on defining success. How will we know when we have it if we don't define it first? How will we know when we have success if we don't define it first? The tricky part is sometimes the success is kind of not definitely defined, like get it on the ballot and get it voted for, right? It's more theoretical. It's more something that needs to be created, right? So who defines success? A lot of you are voting for leader, maybe. I don't usually like to, because you get better buy-in for a workable conclusion if people have really thought it through themselves. They've really decided that this is what the future is going to look like, because that's what success is, to get to the future, right? And the key is always the flexibility. Mm-hmm. So who else can define success? The employer, exactly. The employer, remember we're using a generic term, needs to actually define success before you start. And then you have to explain to them that it's an extremely flexible and fluid thing. But you want to know what they really want. Sometimes you'd be surprised. No one has asked them to define what success looks like. And they haven't the vaguest notion what they really want in a practical, real-life world, right? They really don't. They don't have any kind of a conclusion as to what they want. So you, as leader, need to help them define what success looks like. You need to help define what success looks like. Mm-hmm. And define it in a flexible manner, because take my word for this, generally speaking, the definition that was made at the beginning is no longer the definition that stands at the end. It was made in-house, and it's a guide to where we're going, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Key in defining success is always flexibility. Yes, sometimes the group defines success. That's all right. Sometimes the group wants to make a mission statement. I don't object to that. It needs to be carefully drafted. It takes a while, which is one of the things I object to, I suppose. And the key is to work in some flexibility. Because sometimes, you know who defines success? The circumstances. Sometimes circumstances change, and that's what defines success. Sometimes circumstances change, and that's what defines success. Yeah, how about funding? Either lack or more, mostly lack usually. How about a change in employer? A change in leadership. Things need to be taken into account when you're making your definition. It's kind of a funny thing to say, but not too broad, not too narrow. Right? It needs to be specific enough so you know you're headed, but flexible enough so that if you hit a bump, you're okay. Yes. So, we've left a few minutes for the recipe because I know you guys really like it. Oh, yes, that's the truth. Thank you. Everybody's saying happy holidays to me. Thank you. Yes, it is the holiday season. And we won't see each other again until, we won't hear from each other again until New Year's. Is that true? Well, maybe a little before. In any event, happy holidays to everybody. Thank you for wishing me that. So, recipe for peace now thinks that you should have food because it's a tool. Food is a tool to keep people in the room, to keep them talking, to keep them not angry about something, so that, and also as a cool down, as a timeout, without actually having to send people on a timeout. They're not small children, right? So the food is a tool because everybody likes to eat. And everybody likes a nice potluck where everybody brings something, gives you something to talk about. Ooh, that looks delicious. It smells fabulous. How'd you make it? What's in it, right? So if you're going to have food, and you are, we're going to take a survey. We're going to ask if anybody has any allergies, any prohibitions to food, or any kind of food that they just don't eat. We're going to disseminate that information. Then we're going to ask people when they bring the food to bring a little list to go with it. What's in it? Not what is it called, meatloaf, but what is in it so I can run my eye down the list and see if it's something I think I can eat, right? Right. I think we should have at least one safe recipe. Safe recipe is the kind of food that we eat all the time in your area, because a curry might be very safe with you. And people are familiar with it. They know if they can eat it. I think it's fun to have an adventure recipe occasionally, too, that we always have some safe and some adventures. Now, nothing so adventurous that anybody has a prohibition on our list, right? Because we took the survey. We don't want to exclude anybody. That one, Vivial. But something that's a little more adventure, right? A little more interesting. It's got pork is what it really is. and wine. And people do think that that's kind of adventurous, but it's on the list and nobody's allergic and nobody has a prohibition because we don't exclude anyone. So let's do our adventure recipe, which has been hanging out for a little while. Oops, I only have 5 minutes. It is a pork and sausage casserole, and this is just delicious. So let's have a couple tablespoons of olive oil. Eight boneless pork chops. Around here, pork chops come in packages, I must confess this, and you can get them boneless or you can get what they call pork pieces, which is chopped up pork chop. And it's cheaper because it's kind of the ends from the pork chops and stuff like that. And it's perfectly good. So lots, if you know what I mean. I like to have as many pork chops as people plus four because some people would like extra. And if you've got a lot of people, make it plus 10. I mean, you know your group. I don't like to run out of food. So I'm going to say 8 boneless pork chops for this amount of food, for this amount of ingredients, but you can double it and like that, okay? Let's have 6 sweet Italian sausages. Now, if they're big and long, but they look like little hot dogs here. If you need to, you can take them out of the plastic wrap. I've forgotten what they call that. Yes, the outer casing. Thank you. The outer casing, because of course you take out plastic wrap, but sometimes they have an outer casing, you want to take them out. A nice big onion chopped up. I like a sweet onion. 4 garlic cloves, also chopped up. Let's have 1/2 cup of white wine. Don't use wine that you wouldn't use in real cooking. And yes, you could use red if you'd like. Don't use something you wouldn't drink because it's too bitter. 6 plum tomatoes chopped up and a nice bay leaf, which we're going to fish out, right? I usually cut the pork chops into strips just because it makes more, A, and B, not everybody wants a whole pork chop. They want sausage and pork and like that. So we're going to heat the oil, big frying pan, cook the pork chops until brown on all sides. Also, it browns faster if you make them into strips. I like to have the pork chops. They're not that much more expensive. The strips are a little nicer than the chunks, but that's up to you. But anyway, brown them on all sides. Now we've got the oil and the pork chop in there. Add the sausage, which we've taken out of the casing, right? Squished them up. The onion and the garlic. And it'll take about 5 minutes for this all to get into making a nice browned, delicious thing. In fact, if you see that your pork chops are getting overcooked, just pull them out. Stick them to the side. Mm-hmm. Yes, you guys want to take the pork chops and set them aside. Okay. Take the pork chops out and set them aside. Do the sausage and the onion and the garlic. Mm-hmm. Onion softened. Everything's delicious. Everything smells good. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Add the pork chops back in, the pork back in. Stir in the wine, the tomatoes, and the bay leaf. And take the whole thing and cover the pan and cook it for about 30 minutes. It'll make everything all gotten together, all delicious. You might need a little bit more liquid because it depends how you think about it, because you didn't use canned tomatoes like I often do. But this is a little too much liquid. So you might need to add a little liquid as you go. Take a look at it. You can use more wine. You can use chicken stock or vegetable stock or even beef stock, I suppose, if you prefer, right? But you want it to be delicious and moist but not wet. We're not making soup, right? Everything's delicious. It's done. It's incorporated. It's like a stovetop casserole. It is yummy, and it is our adventure recipe because, A, it has pork and sausage, and B, it has wine. And not everybody eats those things or wants them, right? Yes. The answer is that you serve it. I like to always have a rice cooker full of rice next to it so that people can take as much as they want. Have some rice, have some delicious, kind of spicy casserole because it's, well, I guess it's really not. The Italian sausages are more sweet than they are flaming hot, at least the way I buy them. But it's still a savory dish, and I like to have a bunch of white rice next to it. Delicious. Beautiful. Easy to serve. Ha! We've got it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. My goodness, my voice. If you want to contact us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Yes. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.